The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweiss, and this is the Stoic Jew podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. And welcome back to all of us. We are returning after our two-week break, where I had a much-needed vacation. And I guess I'm going to call this the first episode of season three. Now, I mentioned before the break that we would be switching to the letters of Seneca, but I had an experience that I wanted to talk about in light of a passage from Epictetus. So that's what we're going to start with. I'm recording this on Sunday at 4:15 p.m. Seattle time. I'm supposed to be on a flight from Seattle to New York to return from my vacation, but that flight was canceled due to the winter storm. So I wanted to talk about, you know, what happened, what my reaction to it was, and then examine that in light of this passage from Epictetus and Mishlei. So basically, the bullet point version of the story. So I was supposed to leave Seattle at 2:30 p.m., arrive in New York at 10:30 p.m. I knew that the bulk of the snow was really supposed to be on Monday, but really starting Sunday night, and I figured maybe I could get in ahead of the storm. This morning, the flight was canceled. I was rebooked to a flight from Seattle to LA and then LA to New York, but that flight wouldn't get in until Monday morning. And then the LA to New York flight was canceled on that airline. So I booked another one that went from Seattle to LA and LA to New York. But then I started to have second thoughts because I don't want to get stranded in the airport in the event that that flight is subsequently canceled. I especially don't want to be in LA, which I believe LA County has the currently the highest daily increase of COVID-19 cases in the United States. And LAX is the busiest airport in the United States. So that's not a place where I want to be caught in a pandemic, especially if it's going to be for 24 or more hours. So I ultimately decided to cancel my flight and to attempt to rebook for Tuesday. So now I'm stuck here in Seattle. And how did I react to it? I would say that I reacted with calmness and mild irritation. Certainly it was irritating because I had to make all these last minute flight arrangements. I had to cancel grocery deliveries. I had to like work out a new teaching schedule that takes into account the fact that I'm going to be 3 hours behind New York and decide about whether I wanted to like wake up at 5 a.m. to give my morning Mishlei shiur in yeshiva. But it was very annoying. But at the same time, I did not get angry. I didn't get flustered. I didn't get, upset, depressed, any of these extreme emotions. It was mild annoyance. And I attribute this primarily to Mishlei and Stoicism, which use different methods. And that's really what I wanted to talk about. So just to outline this, if I had to pick one excerpt from any writing of any of the Stoics, which really represented what I view as the essence of Stoicism, it would be the opening passage of Epictetus's Enchiridion, his handbook. Now, the main texts of Epictetus are the discourses, which are much more informal in style, but then his student Arian distilled Epictetus's teachings in ethics or his practical teachings into a handbook, which is kind of like a cheat sheet that gives you actionable principles. And the handbook opens with the following. He says, "On the one hand, there are things that are in our power, whereas other things are not in our power. In our power are opinion, impulse, desire, aversion, and in word, whatever is our own doing. Things not in our power include our body, our possessions, our reputations, our status, and in a word, whatever is not our own doing. Now, things that are in our power are by nature free, unhindered, unimpeded, but things not in our power are weak, slavish, hindered, and belong to others. Remember, therefore, that whenever you suppose those things that are by nature slavish to be free, or those things that belong to others to be your own, you will be hindered, miserable, and distressed, and you will find fault with both God and men. If, however, you suppose to be yours only what is yours, and what belongs to another to belong to another, as indeed it does, no one will ever compel you, no one will hinder you, you will find fault with no one, reproach no one, nor act against your own will. You will have no enemies, and no one will harm you, for no harm can touch you." So basically what he's saying is that everything in the world falls, at any given moment, falls into two categories, things in your control and things not in your control. And if you try to control what's not in your control, you're going to be miserable and frustrated and it's going to be bad. Whereas if you only focus on what is in your control, then everything will be fine. So that's really, you know, that's the basis of Stoicism, and that's really how you attain Stoic peace of mind. And in a case like this, where I think certain people, I mean, certainly myself, before I started learning Michelin Stoicism, if my flight was canceled, I would have probably been very angry and very upset. And according to Epictetus, that really stems from this feeling that I should have somehow been able to control that. And the fact that I thought I was entitled to control it and I couldn't, that's where the frustration came from. And so over the years, being able to quickly make that distinction between what's in my control and what's not, and then to accept that, that is what really has allowed the peace of mind. And truthfully, again, even, you know, it's a process. I still experience the mild annoyance and mild irritation. And in fact, what was interesting was there was a point when I had, you know, when I had that flight from Seattle to LA and then LA to New York, and I was thinking, do I want to chance it? And then I decided to cancel it. And then I found out afterwards that the flights from LA to New York were all canceled. And that gave me greater peace of mind. And when that gave me greater peace of mind, what it made me realize is, as long as there was a possibility in my mind that I could have flown from LA to New York, so then I still was able to maintain the illusion of control. But then once I found out that all the flights from LA to New York were canceled, it allowed me to say, ha, there's nothing I could have done, you know? And it all came down to that feeling of, you know, being able to control this, you know, or you know, of assuming that I should be able to control this or wanting to be able to control it. Now, the question is, how do you get to this point? You know, like it sounds good on paper and intellectually we accept this idea, but how do you actually like implement it? You know, so I know of two major strategies. I mean, maybe there are more, but I know of two major strategies that I certainly use. One is from Epictetus himself, and the other is from Michelet. So Epictetus, in the handbook, in chapter 12, paragraph or section 2, he says, and I'm taking this out of context. I don't really think you need the context here. He says, therefore, begin with the little things. The olive oil is spilled. The wine is stolen. Say to yourself, this is the price for peace of mind, and this is the price for being free of troubles. Nothing can be had without paying the price. And when you call your slave boy, bear in mind that it is quite possible he won't heed you, or even if he does heed you, it is quite possible that he won't do the things you tell him to. But he is not in so fine a position that your peace of mind depends upon him. So this strategy really is begin with the little things and remind yourself that this really is the price to pay. You know, if you want the peace of mind, then you have to be willing to give up that childish indulgence in the anger of like, how, you know, I can't believe this happened to me, or like, how dare they, you know? You have to be willing to give that up and consciously exercise this way of thinking, in which you don't get to have that satisfaction of feeling like the victim, and it is a price, you know. So this is one of Epictetus's methods. Michelet uses a different method, which is, you know, Michelet does not focus on, all of Michelet is built on this premise, the premise that there are things in your control and things that you're not, because according to the way I teach Michelet, which is according to Sadia Gaon, it's a book about everyday decision-making. And in every decision-making scenario, the first thing you have to do is identify what's in your control and what's not. And the pasuk is only going to be telling you how to act on those things that are in your control. You know, it's not going to be talking about things that are not in your control. Michelet is a practical book about decision-making. So every pasuk in Michelet presupposes Epictetus's way of thinking, but the difference is that Epictetus is really trying to change your feelings through thought per se, meaning catching yourself in the moment and thinking about this distinction and saying, is this in my control or is it not in my control? Whereas Michelet is using this as a means and then saying, okay, fine, given the fact that factors X, Y, and Z are in your control and A, B, C are not, here's what you're going to do with X, Y, Z in order to maximize the benefit that you can get out of making an active decision. In other words, Michelet is proactively focusing on using what's in your control to advance your situation and to get more pleasure out of life, to get more enjoyment, to get more profit, you know? Whereas that's something that we're naturally motivated to do. Whereas Epictetus is much more of a contemplation-based emphasis. In fact, you know, if you look through the Stoics, you know, you don't see them talk. I mean, again, I haven't read through all the writings, but like, you don't see them talk very often about achieving success in the material world, you know, or gaining, you know, kavod, gaining honor, or you know, any of these other things that people strive for. You know, the Stoics really eschew those things and try to prompt you to change your value system. Mishle takes the opposite approach. Mishle leans into those things and says, if you want riches, this is how you do it. If you want honor, this is how you seek it. You know, if you want, you know, to defeat your enemies, this is how you go about it. So Mishle, you know, takes the goods that you are already pursuing, shows you how to pursue those goods using chachma, using wisdom, and shows you that in order to achieve that, you will need to make this distinction between things that are in your control and things that are not in your control. And by doing so, it habituates you to start thinking about the world in this way as a means of pursuing the things that you already naturally want to pursue. Stoicism forces you to pay the price, as Epictetus says, and to like withdraw from the things that you're naturally interested in pursuing in order to attain this peace of mind. So I think those are just two interesting strategies. And, you know, they both work in their different ways. But I think from practicing these things, again, on the small areas in life, then, you know, when something quote unquote big happens, and as I'm saying, I think that's ridiculous. Obviously a flight cancellation is not something big, but something bigger than spilling the olive oil, you know, where let's say like it affects other things in your life or affects other people, you'll be more prepared to naturally, have peace of mind when these bigger things happen. And then when the really truly big things happen, like sickness and death and, you know, and the real, you know, the real tragedies in life or the real unpredictable things, then hopefully you'll be better equipped to do that. So that was just my thought from today's activities. And the funny thing also is, as I was recording this, three attempts at recording this, I was interrupted once by a phone call, the second time by a butt dial on WhatsApp, and then the third time by another distraction. And so, you know, I went into the, you know, I'm in Seattle, I'm not in my own apartment. So I know that this environment is subject to different interruptions and distractions that are not in my control. And it was just ironic, as I felt like it was whenever I got to the sentence of things not in your control, then the phone would ring and I'd have to stop and record everything again. But anyway, that's it for today's episode. Before we conclude, I actually have a favor to ask you. I was notified that in the latest edition of Chakira, in volume, I think it's volume 29, Chakira is a publication of Jewish thought that's printed out of Flatbush, I believe, by someone who's a friend of mine from the early blogging days. So in the recent article there, in the recent edition, there's an article called Between the Stoikos and the Beth Midrash, a philosophical and ethical comparative analysis of Stoicism and Judaism by someone named Stuart Rubin. Now, I tried looking for how to contact this Stuart Rubin guy on just through Google searches, and I couldn't find anything the first time I tried it. If any of you knows how to get a hold of this person, I haven't read the article yet. I put in an order, so I should hopefully have it before Shabbos to read, assuming that's in my control. I really am curious as to what he has to say, but like obviously this is something that I would be interested in, an article about Stoicism and Judaism, and I want to talk to this guy. So if any of you know who he is or how to get a hold of him, feel free to shoot me an email at rabbischneeweiss@gmail.com. That is it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today and would like to support my production of even more Torah content, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/rabbischneeweiss. Link is in the description. And this is going to be February 1st when this episode airs. And so the beginning of the month is a good time to sign up for the Patreon. So if you are if you're a new listener, an old listener, and you find this content to be valuable, and you can spare $3 a month, that would go a long way, because really it's because of listeners like you that I can continue to produce this content on my own time, instead of having to support myself through additional income by tutoring, which is also nice, but does not reach nearly as many people and doesn't fulfill my teaching passions in quite the same way. So, thank you to my listeners for listening, and thank you to my patrons for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.